Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Nikola.
And I'm Vlad.
And we have another great show for you today. We're going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff, I think.
As usual.
Haven't looked at the deck yet, so I have no idea what we're going to be talking about.
You have.
Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just being funny. Anyway, let's start with events. What events are happening right now?
I love events.
I think there's an event happening now every week or something like that. The next event that's going to be streaming live online is going to be the Microsoft Data AMP event.
What is AMP?
Amplifier, I'm guessing.
Probably.
Amplification? I don't know. So but what it's about, big data, machine learning, AI. We're going to have Scott Guthrie, Joseph Subrash. There are big names out there. We're going to be talking about all kinds of cool stuff and innovations that Microsoft have been doing in those fields for people that have, you know, a lot of data and they want to learn from this data and want to do some cool stuff with this data and want to get up to speed where the market is. I think it's a great event.
So if you know what big data means, that's the event for you. Yeah. If you don't know, like you're going to watch it. Even. Yeah.
So it's on April 19th and sign up. You can sign up right now, I believe, or shortly you can sign up as well. Anyway,
Windows 10 SDK. So this week we shipped another preview of Windows 10 SDK, and it's actually this moment of the year is quite special. We don't usually ship them that often. Mm-hmm. Like, we usually ship them, I don't know, probably once in 3 months or 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this year it's like.
It's the closer we get to actually officially mm-hmm. releasing an official SDK, the more. We release them, the much more frequently release them. But the thing is, there's not many changes. You know, earlier on, it's like, we added this thing. Now it's more like, we didn't really add anything. We simply just fixed bugs, or we fix a few different things that that weren't working, or we just finished implementing some things. So there's a new SDK, 52. I think 42 was released a couple weeks ago. And one before that was 21, which actually had all the big changes. But it there's not many changes now, but this has a better improvements in performance and just stability.
So and the reason is because we are trying to give you new bits as early as possible. And this is why we introduce new bugs. And this is why we need to fix them and ship you another preview.
Exactly.
Hopefully with the less bugs than the
previous. Which is cool, because this is 52, and I believe 58 is the insider build right now. So the SDK and the insider build are actually really closely right now.
Yeah, connected. And like internally, in case if you don't know, we don't build SDK for every build of Windows.
No. Anyway, now if you didn't see last show or you weren't here last week, Visual Studio was released 2017. And there was a lot of new stories there. But one of the things that we didn't mention is that the icon for the Visual Studio was updated.
I love this icon.
It's a bit different. I'm not the hugest fan of this icon, but what I like about it is they actually have different icons for different parts of Visual Studio now. So Blend has its own icon now. I think Visual Studio, they mentioned, is going to come up with its own icon soon as well. So that way, when you have multiple open in the taskbar, it's easier to see which one's which without actually having to, which one is it, Blend or is it Visual Studio? And it's more difficult before. Now it's a lot easier. And John goes through the iteration of how they went about designing these icons.
And they're also pretty.
They are pretty.
I love them. Those are like cool icons.
Yeah, and speaking of Visual Studio, there was a lot of stuff released as part of Visual Studio 2017. And Tim Sneed actually released a whole huge poster. Mm-hmm. And this, I'm talking about a huge poster. There's no way, if you print this out on a piece of paper, you won't be able to read anything because it's huge. But it talks about all the different things that are new in Visual Studio 2017. What's included, what's part of it. So it's a great thing. If you have a big printer, they can print like a big, really, really big poster. This would be a great thing to print and put it in your office. And
just, yeah, I'd love to have one. I used to have a lot of posters around me and then I kind of got rid of, I don't know why. And like it seems Visual Studio is really visual because we're talking about new icons and then new poster. It's all about visual elements. And
I learn things visually. That's how I learn most of the things.
Exactly.
If I see something pretty and nice, it makes me remember it and I get to, you know, use it more.
Yeah, and that's why you're watching this show instead of just reading stuff, you know, from the web. Because you also learn things visually.
That's true. That's a very good point. Anyway, speaking of more updates, there's a new update to the virtual machines for Visual Studio ALM. This is stuff that the ALM team is releasing periodically with new updates for some of the Visual Studio, the VS and TFS stuff that's being released. So there's a And this one, there's new stuff about upgraded Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server to 2017. So it comes with the latest stuff there, some updated samples and toys applications out there. So it's if you're using the ALM samples, VMs, it's a great time to update. Or if you just want to check out a full-fledged VM that has everything installed, so you don't have to do it yourself, just go ahead and click the download link and just run the VM.
Yeah, and just to mention, there are VMs for other technologies we have, like for Windows, for SDKs, for different versions of Visual Studio, and there is, I believe, we also install like other products in there. So if you're learning new stuff, it's instead of like messing up with your machine, especially if you're using it for something important like production code and everything, you better use virtual machines.
No, I agree. And you can either load it as part of Hyper-V and have it as a virtual machine running side by side as your the host machine, or you can also boot to it. So you can boot to VHD and actually boot to it as a real machine. But if something happens, you can always go back to your release, whatever official thing
exactly.
You're using.
Speaking about Visual Studio, when you upgrade from one major release to another major release, especially when it comes to developer tools, you usually have some issues. Some products have a lot of issues, some products have just a few. And Daniel actually published a post of his experience upgrading to Visual Studio 2017 from 2015. And actually, he had some of how he said gotchas. And those are only three gotchas. It's not a lot. And Daniel also provides ways to fix them, like workarounds. So if you have this problem, this is the way to fix it. So before you face those problems, you probably want to read Daniel's post and see how to fix these issues in advance. Before, like, you try to build your projects and see, oh, they're not building. What am I going to do?
Yeah, I mean, Daniel has done a great job in chasing the solution for this. I don't know how much time he spent trying to figure out why something wasn't working, but I'm happy that he actually blogged about it and makes it easier for other people to find the solutions. Because I'm sure it's not going to be the only one running into these issues, so it's good to have this on there. Yeah. So it's a great blog post to bookmark just to come back in the future if something's happening.
Yeah, and by the way, if you read this post and you realize you found different problems, and especially if you found different solutions, you probably want to let us know in the comments section or, mention us on Twitter. Just send it our way so we can share these fixes.
Exactly. Or update the product as well.
Next week.
Last week, I think it was last week, there was the Node.js VM Summit happening here. What I like about this summit is you can actually see the people actually agreeing when to meet and all this stuff, because everything's open source for Node.js. And there was a discussion on GitHub where people were like, oh, like, when are we going to meet? Where are we going to meet to set up this summit? So everything's happening in the open. But Arunesh, who attended the summit, had some notes about what was discussed at the summit. And he discussed some of the new things that the Node.js is trying to tackle and how to make things better for people that are creating packages for Node.js and how things would move on into the future for integrating these packages and playing nicely with C and C++, et cetera. So it's a great way to see the direction that Node.js is taking, and reading these notes is actually very helpful for anybody that's building stuff for Node.js or building on top of Node.js.
Yeah, and that meeting was actually about connecting together different virtual machine vendors, because there's Google, there's Microsoft, there are probably more machines for JavaScript, and like sitting in one room is already a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. It's a setup from all the big players in the field. It's crazy. And now, going back to learning, for those that don't know, the Microsoft Virtual Academy website actually has a lot of a list of videos that people can watch and they can follow along. And people like Scott Hanselman and other people have created a whole sessions on different types of topics and learning paths for you to learn how to do something in the specific technology, do ASP.NET development, do UDLP development, any kind of development. There's a bunch of topics. And if you've been using MVA, there's now an update to MVA where they've added learning paths, so a curated list of things that we believe are things that you should follow if you want to learn a specific technology. So let's say you want to learn about ASP.NET. we have a curated list of videos that you should follow, and then you get points and badges for these. So you can always come back to your account and see how far you've gotten to these, and it actually keeps track of all the progress you've done as learning these videos. So it's a great new feature and add-on that makes it easier for anybody to follow along and to learn a new technology and save some time instead of trying to search what videos should I watch. We basically tell you these are the videos you should watch if you want to do this.
Yeah, and by the way, MBA is a great resource. Some videos, they only exist on MBA. And for example, like that's kind of my thing, DirectX course. I believe is if you never tried DirectX and these kind of low-level graphics programming, the course we have on MBA is the best one because it's not too simple. It's not like you playing CodeMonkey when you instructed like do this, and then you have something but you don't understand what you've just done. But it's also not very complicated. Right? You can actually understand what's going on. So check it out. MBA is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I've used MBA for some other services, and we've actually recorded videos for MBAs ourselves, which is pretty cool. So bonus points for those that can find our videos.
Yes. and you can add badges.
Yeah. Andre Jimchuk mm-hmm. has a great blog post that he posted about microservices and Azure Service Fabric and how to take, he takes a real example of a project that he has and walks users of how to approach microservices from, you already have a project, and how do you approach mm-hmm. it from the architecture standpoint, from the business standpoint, how do you create your architecture so you can have these different microservices to talk to different business services, how you create the front end and the API level, and how do you have the back end data services, et cetera. So it's a great, getting started with microservices and just learning about how microservices and Azure Service Fabric works. It's a great blog post.
Yeah, he actually started with his previous post. He started from just overview of how you transition existing like traditional apps to microservice architecture. And with this post, he's kind of going deeper with that. He's taking like a real example of a monolithic app and then how you transform it to a non-monolithic architecture with the Azure Service Fabric.
And for me, this is great because I'm not a huge, a web developer mm-hmm. or a service developer myself, but it's a great way for me to even understand the Service Fabric and how it works and how microservices tie into the whole deal.
And also why.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Always a big question. Oh, there's a new technology. Let's use it. And then like half a year later, why?
It's new.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it. Let's go to picks of the week. What's your pick of the week, Vlad?
Oh, my pick of the week. There is a backstory behind that. I recently discovered that my daughter is actually doing using the website that called Hour of Code, where mm-hmm. they teach kids programming, and I was amazed how many ways they have to teach kids. And then I discovered that there is actually a Project Arena done by MSR in Cambridge, UK, and it's made especially for kids with the visual impairments. Because one of the ways that Hour of Code teaches kids programming, then you move blocks, you connect different blocks, and you're getting a result. And there are like if blocks, there are like action mm-hmm. blocks, and all sorts of things.
But everything's on a computer screen.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, everything is on the screen. And if you are a kid, like you cannot operate. Even if they provide a special devices for input and output, it's not comfortable for you to learn because you're learning new things. You're learning like these new logics behind the way computer operates, and then it's also not very comfortable for you. These guys, they basically made physical things you connect together, and everything, every device, which is quite easy to operate. Also, those are not like micro, schemes or something. Those are easy to operate, and those are logical blocks, and those are action blocks, and you connect them together, and you get the result. So they basically operate in the way computer operates. It's just easy to deal with them.
Which is great, and we've seen something like mm-hmm. this before. We've seen different vendors creating IoT solutions, so you can plug in like an actuator and a resistor, and you can plug in different types of things like a speaker and LED,
yeah.
and you make them do different things, and this they make for learning. How is this different than doing something like that?
Those kids, they're very similar from the idea perspective. The only difference is that they always aim to either emulate the physical world, or let's imagine we're building a dinosaur or we're building a machine, or they aiming towards like a certain I don't know, audio device or a graphics device or something about like very physical, specific things. And these guys, they made a thing for just teaching computer programming in general. So you're getting this general knowledge and general like way of thinking, because when you start programming, you know, it kind of transforms the way you think about this, these techniques, and this is like a more general thing. And also, what's also important, it's easy to operate for these children.
Yeah, it's
like
easier
the IoT solutions, they usually
very
specific.
It's big and has like big buttons, and you can actually feel each
one
different shape, so it's much easier to understand what you're touching and how you're interacting with it, which is really cool. Cool.
Yeah,
well, mine's actually kind of similar. It has to do with coding as well. It's about creating Microsoft Research has created an AI, an artificial intelligence. They can actually write its own code. And the goal here is they have a global goal here that they eventually hope to get to is you can tell a computer, I want to build this. And the computer can actually take a fraction of a second to build, write the code to actually build the solution for you. And it's actually a great idea. It's something I've always wanted to do because I can think of ideas great and I can code them myself, but I don't want to take the days and whatever it takes just to code this up because it's boring. I've done it before. It's a repetitive task. I want to think of the big ideas, maybe think of something that's even funner and I've never done before. So this is what they're trying to do. And they've created this AI that can, and the way it works is it can take code that already written before or code that somebody else has written and take parts of different applications and just construct a code that's made out of all the different things. It's kind of like most developers
do it
this
day.
It's like, you go to Stack Overflow, oh, code, cool, I can put it in my application. It does what I need. So this is what the AI does, but hopefully in the future it can even do even more than that, which
hopefully
is pretty cool.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I read the comments on this. Some of the comments are talking about, oh my God, what if this becomes an actual AI that can think and that can want to destroy the humanity.
Not destroy the humanity, it's just going to destroy your job, man.
Well, that's why you learn to code better.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's all I got. So thanks everybody for joining us. Thank you, Vlad. Thanks everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Nicola. And have fun, guys. Bye.